So we're continuing through the book of Isaiah. No, it's not. It's Nehemiah. It's one of those books in the Old Testament, kind of in the second half of the Old Testament. But we're in Nehemiah. And I thought that the passage that we, this was not an intentional design, but the passage that we're looking at today is very easy to apply it to dads. It's easy to apply it to anybody who's in leadership. But I'd like to start out with a quote that I came across from a person by the name of Thomas Carlyle. He was a Scottish historian, and he said that adversity is hard on a person, but for one person who can handle prosperity, there are 100 that will handle adversity. What he's saying that it's actually more difficult to be successful than it is to be challenged, because how we deal with success really shows who we are from the inside out. Eger. How many people have heard of Eger? Eger wrote some of Scripture. Proverbs chapter 30, Eger, son of Jacca. He understood this. He said, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of God. Eger understood that what we want success, we want prosperity, but he understood how dangerous it is. Nehemiah understood that as well. Nehemiah went from, think about the transformation in his life. Nehemiah, as we start the book out, he has a job. He is the cupbearer of the king of Persia, King Artaxerxes. Now, the cupbearer, so on our boat, we have these things called zincs or anodes. And for those of you who have had a boat before, you've got these galvanized pieces of metal that are attached to the precious pieces of metal, your prop, your other things, your prop shaft, things that are under the water, so that as the salt water corrodes, it attacks these cheap pieces of metal, so that in the process, the more valuable pieces are saved. They're sacrificial lambs to the valuable things on a boat. Okay, Nehemiah was a zinc. He drank everything that the king was going to drink, and if there was poison in it, it would take out Nehemiah before it took out the king. That was his job. He knew that he was dispensable. That he was the first in line to go. And so he went from being this slave who was answerable to one person to becoming the leader, the governor of Judah, where he oversaw thousands of people. And so he went from somebody who was the canary in the coal mine to being the person who said how things were going to be in the entire province of Judah. What a promotion. He went from being a servant to a success. But how he dealt with that success, we see in Nehemiah chapter 5, shows that he understood a lot about leadership, the dangers of being successful. And we can look at these principles that we see in these five verses in Nehemiah 5 today and apply them easily to ourselves if we have leadership in business, in our family, in the church. Any way we influence other people, these principles they've been proven by God to work. And so what I'd like us to do is stand together and read Nehemiah chapter 5. He says, moreover, from the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, until his 32nd year, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. But the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to the food and wine. Their assistants also lorded it over the people. But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Instead, I devoted myself to the work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nation. Each day, one ox, 6 choice sheep, and some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor, because the demands were heavy on these people. Remember me with favor, my God, for all I have done for these people. You may be seated. We see 4 principles laid out that Nehemiah operated under as he served as governor of Judah. And the first one I've paraphrased or said that privileges are used, not abused. He says, moreover, from the 20th year, for 12 years he was governor, and neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. Now, it wasn't just about what filled his pantry. The governors had this special privilege, this perk at work, that they were allowed to assess the locals and live off of what they assessed. It was like the tax collectors in Jesus' day. They could add this surcharge to the taxes, and then they got to keep that and live off of it. It was a pretty special promotion. Once you get to be governor, you've got it made. Because if you want to raise your lifestyle, you just raise taxes and you live off of that. Nehemiah said that never once did I take advantage of this benefit that came with the job. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do something. When we deny ourselves the privileges that we are entitled to, it speaks volumes to the people that we lead. I knew a guy, he was a friend of mine. He worked for Milliman Actuarial Firm. Lynn is now one of the partners at Milliman, but this was a long time ago. A friend of mine worked at Milliman. And he worked hard, and he was driven to success. He worked and he worked and he worked, and he finally reached a point where he was suggested or offered the opportunity to become a partner. And so he was accepted, became a partner in the firm, and along with this came a lot of privileges. At least back in those days, I don't know how it is now. But he got a corner office. You guys still in the Rainier Tower? Yep, okay. So you have a corner office? Oh, sorry. Okay. Anyway, he had a corner office. He had a prime parking spot in the base or in the parking garage under the Rainier Tower. He had all kinds of benefits. But one of the benefits that he really liked is that he could go into work whenever he wanted to. And he had worked so hard for so long, traveled to so many places, that once he acquired a partnership or became a principal, he thought, I'm going to work from home. And so I'm going to work a little bit. You know, I've finally arrived. I've achieved. I've made it. But what he found is that his staff became a little frustrated. They lost their motivation. And it took him a long time working long hours to regain that trust from his staff because he was enjoying all the benefits that came with the position. when we sacrifice some of the things that we're entitled to, it speaks volumes to the people that we're trying to lead. Think of Jesus. Remember what Paul writes about him in Philippians chapter 2. He says that Jesus, who was in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. But he set it aside. He left heaven. He came to earth, took the form of a servant, and ultimately died on the cross for your sins and for mine. And when we think of what Jesus was willing to give up in order to bless us, then as he calls us to follow him, we can do so with trust because he knows, we know that he's not about advancing himself. He's willing to sacrifice for us. And it builds within us an ability to trust and to follow. It's what Nehemiah knew. That's how Nehemiah lived. He didn't take advantage of the blessings or the benefits of the office so that the people would respect him, would trust him, and would follow him. Good leaders use their privileges for the good of other people, not just for themselves. Now, the second principle that we see at work here is what I've called right preempts easy. Nehemiah says that the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to the food and the wine their assistants also lorded it over the people, but out of reverence for God, I didn't act like that. Nehemiah inherited a dysfunctional culture. There were a small group of elite that were prospering at the expense of a large number of people living in poverty. Now, it would have been very easy for Nehemiah to step into and say, hey, it's always been like this. We'll just keep it going. Inertia is a difficult force to overcome. But Nehemiah didn't do the easy thing. He did the right thing. And he had a lot of resistance because even though he was replacing a previous governor, the previous governor's assistants were still there. And they were used to having the benefits coming to them. And so when Nehemiah said, we're not going to do things this way anymore, he got pushback. Because people don't like change. People don't like change, especially when it impacts them and the good things that they've had. Doesn't matter whether it's good or not. It's easy to let things go as they always have. So I brought this stool up here. Some of you know we've got a little cabin over east of the mountains, and it has a deck that was built by the previous owner. And every year I've got to climb under the deck and jack it up, and it's on a hillside, and so the posts kind of slide down the hill. And now the boards are starting to rot, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to tear the thing down and rebuild it. Now, they built this deck with the posts, and they sit on top of concrete piers that are dug down about 6 inches down into the ground. And that's the easy way. But what happens is that the ground freezes, and it thaws, and it shifts around, and the deck settles, so we just ripped it out and thought, you know, we're going to do this the right way. I'm going to dig holes that are 2 feet by 2 feet. We're going to go down at least 2 feet from the low point on the hillside. And so that's what I did all last Monday was dig holes in clay with rock, with a big iron bar and a post hole digger. And boy, if I stand too long, I was hoping we could sit down after one song today. But if I stand for too long, my back is tightening up. And so if I need to, the stool is there, or else we could just finish early. But now I see why the people built the deck in the first place the way they did, because it's easy. But it's not right. And it makes me think in leadership, especially within the home, sometimes dads speaking as one, I think we opt for easy over right. We don't want to make a problem. So we just kind of ignore things. Dads, encourage you. Don't just give your child an electronic device to keep them occupied so you can look at your electronic device. Spend time with your kids. Try to fast forward into the future and then look back and ask yourself, what kind of decisions or choices can I make today that I'll be happy about 10 years from now or at the end of my life? When we can project forward and make our decisions now with the future in view, we're going to be happy for the decisions that we made. If we choose the right thing today, it's always going to be, we're always going to be happy that we made those choices in the future. And when we do it for God out of reverence for Him, we can live in the future without regret. So remember the first thing, privileges are to be used, not abused. The second thing is that right always preempts easy. The third thing that we see Nehemiah doing, and it's a good lesson for us, is to keep busy and focused. Nehemiah said that instead, I devoted myself to the work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We didn't acquire any land. Nehemiah came to Judah for a purpose, to rebuild the wall. He devoted himself to rebuilding the wall and to make the city safe again. Nehemiah and those around him, even though they had challenges of the project, they had opposition from enemies, they had temptations from the benefits of the job, Nehemiah kept the main thing the main thing. He always knew that he was there to get the wall built and to run the city. They weren't there to prosper. They weren't there to acquire stuff. They had a job to do, and it shaped their agenda every single day. Good things, enticing things, didn't distract them from the best things. And so that brings up the question, what are the good things in our life? What kind of a task have we been called to? Remember back in Mark chapter 12, a teacher of the law came to Jesus and he said, what's the most important thing for us to remember? And Jesus said, the most important one is, hear this, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like this, love your neighbor as yourself. Love God with everything that you have, and then love other people the way you love yourself. Jesus said, this is first and foremost the most important thing we can do. Some of us have to-do lists. They might be on our phones. They might be on tablets of paper. They might be recorded in our minds. We wake up in the morning and think, these are the things that I've got to get done today. How many of us on our to-do list, number one, have to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then love those around me. But God said, this is the most important thing for us to do. Sometimes I think we've let the main thing become a secondary thing. We just get reminded of it once in a while. A good leader remains focused and is busy about the things that are most important. Dads, what are we called to do? Ephesians chapter 6, Colossians chapter 3 tell us that we are not to exasperate our children, but instead to bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. But as dads, sometimes we get so busy with our jobs, with our kids' schooling, their sports, their music, their friends, our hobbies, that we forget the fact that training our kids to know the Lord, to love the Lord, and to follow the Lord is our highest calling. Good leaders, servant leaders, keep the main thing the main thing. We stay busy, but we stay on track. Last principle that we see is what I've called people first. Remember, Nehemiah went to Judah for a purpose. He went to get a job done, to build a wall, to secure a city. But he never lost sight of the fact that people were more important than projects. Verse 17, it says, furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table. Nehemiah, in addition to building the wall and securing the city, had the responsibility to take care of the people, the civil servants, the people who worked in the government and administration of Jerusalem. He was responsible for feeding 150 people. And he knew that these people were counting on him. In addition to that, there were foreign envoys and dignitaries that would come, and it was his responsibility to treat them as a host. Nehemiah knew that there were people that were counting on him, and he never became so focused on the project that he forgot about the people that were under his care. But he balanced that out with the struggling people that were making everything happen, the taxpayers. He says, in spite of all of this, I demanded no food allotted to the governor because the demands were heavy on these people. And so he had things that he had to do with this tax money, but he never benefited from it personally because he knew the people were struggling. Nehemiah understood that people were more important than the jobs that needed to get done, that he balanced both the needs of the people and the needs of the work. People took priority over comfort for Nehemiah. Nehemiah ate what everybody else ate. He lived like everybody else did because he knew that people were important. And that's important for us to remember as well. When we get busy with so much to do, it's people that actually matter. Dads, I know that demands at work can be great, but you've got people at home that are counting on you as well. Let's try to keep work and life into balance, because people matter. This last week on the news, I saw a report about a retirement party that took place at Starbucks headquarters just down the street here. And this story reinforced to me the fact that at least many at Starbucks understand that people matter as well. And if you didn't see Channel 13's news last week, we're going to get a chance to watch this now if everything goes without. Hey, it's working.
Like
good job.
I'd like to ask you guys to come in a little bit closer if you can.
Welcome to the party inside Starbucks headquarters.
We're excited to just get together and show them some love.
I'm going to let you right.
A celebration of someone who has influenced almost every person here.
And one of the most important partners who has been part of Starbucks history is Kenny.
Ken is my most favorite person at Starbucks. You can say that Howard is the king of coffee, but Ken is the king of coffee.
Just an amazing human being.
Okay, enough waiting. Time to meet the man of the hour.
Are you coming in tomorrow at all? Are you done today?
No, this is my last day.
This is the last day.
So he is retiring, if you can believe that.
I miss you.
Tough to believe because Kenny Cranning has a history with Starbucks, as rich as its coffee.
You have been one of my best friends since I've started at Starbucks, and you mean the world to me.
Kenny started at Starbucks almost 29 years ago at the company's roasting plant in Kent. Then he moved to headquarters, stocking kitchens where people gather. The perfect place for Kenny.
Hey, buddy.
Honey.
To connect.
Good.
Kenny has a job here that is really, makes him really visible to everybody, but he also loves to interact with everybody.
Interaction that enlightened others here.
It's been a pleasure working with you, guy.
To the remarkable abilities of those with disabilities.
May I hug you? Sure.
Yes, Kenny has blazed so many trails.
I'm going to miss you.
His humor. That's my favorite. His smile.
Kenny's opened our eyes to just being kind always to everybody, and he exudes that. And I love him.
Oh, yeah.
So they gave him a send-off worthy of a superstar.
Can I have a picture with you?
Sure.
Okay.
As part of this toast.
From all of us at Starbucks. So this is for you.
He's very special.
He autographed photos.
Thank you, Ken.
And handed out roses to the ladies.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ken.
That was Kenny's idea.
Oh, thank you. I feel special. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so proud.
That's Kenny's mother, who says Starbucks has been his family.
Given him self-esteem.
Thank you for everything. I miss you.
Given him encouragement.
I really had a good time seeing you around here, and I hope you have a great retirement.
Giving him humor.
Smell pretty.
Giving him love.
I'm gonna miss you.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes in the building, you just see it.
I'm gonna miss you, Kenny.
Have you seen all the pictures that they're playing of you up on the screens?
A highlight reel showcasing Kenny's career and one of his closest relationships with Starbucks founder, Howard Schultz.
Kenny's story is featured in Howard's most recent book.
Schultz writing in that book, Kenny is a perpetually uplifting spirit. And when I was in a bad mood, I'd walk the halls looking for him. So it seemed only fitting.
Hi.
The two got some FaceTime before Kenny's final goodbye.
I love you too.
All right, let's go.
We all want to leave work for the last time believing we made a difference.
Kenny's one of a kind. We love Kenny.
Kenny Cranning changed attitudes.
Bye, Kenny!
Teaching so many the value of acceptance.
Bye, Kenny! Bye!
Isn't he sweet? So for changing perceptions and the culture at Starbucks, and for handing out so many roses, we honor Kenny Cranning as a change maker in our community. We know there are change makers in your city.
You've probably been to retirement parties before, but have you ever seen somebody get hugged and kissed? And I mean, even the CEO of a Fortune 500 company wanting to call and communicate with him. People matter. So I'm not a huge Starbucks fan because, you know, it's just this corporate, you know. But it improved my opinion of Starbucks, seeing that they understand that people matter. And they matter in our lives. They matter in our families. They matter in our church. And let's not let the demands of projects crowd out the fact that people are more important than just getting things done. Dads remember that. Leaders remember that. I think everyone has received some degree of leadership, that there are people in our lives that we are called to influence. And if there's not somebody in your life like that right now, God is preparing you for the future when that will be. But do remember, when you're leading, first of all, remember that privileges are to be used and not abused. That right always triumphs easy. Remember as well that we want to keep busy and focused on the things that are important. And then let's not forget that people matter. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the example of Jesus that has...